3 o'clock hour. We are live from the Oxygen Community Studios. Happy Tuesday to you. We're the Burns and Gambo Show. John Gambadoro, Dave Burns, hanging out with you today. The second preseason game of the year coming up on Friday against the Chiefs, and judging by the sounds of it, and we'll play some of the sound about it for you in a couple moments here. It sounds like this might be the closest thing we get to a dress rehearsal for the Cardinals in this offseason, this
preseason. I think so.
You kind of get that sense, don't you?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. It feels like that it's not going to be the third preseason game. It's going to be the second preseason game where you're going to get the dress rehearsal. Like I say, more on that in a second. The opponent is interesting because it's Kansas City, because it's Patrick Mahomes, because Cliff Kingsbury and Patrick Mahomes have the relationship, obviously, that they do from college. And because everybody would like Kyler Murray to be like Patrick Mahomes one of these days. And the comparisons, people are trying to draw it up, with, especially with Cliff as the common denominator. And he said today, look, it's a great model to follow, the Patrick Mahomes model. He sits for a year. He doesn't play. Alex Smith wins a bunch of games. Patrick Mahomes takes over that team a year later and becomes one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL.
You couldn't have drew it out any better. It was perfect.
It was perfect. He said that model is a different situation than what Kyler's going through.
They're a great model to follow with the success they've had. And this situation is completely different for Kyler. I mean, he came into the last place team. You know, they were a team that I think they had the 27th pick and traded up. So it was a playoff team that he was able to go into, learn for a year, and then, you know, take over. And he's been unbelievable ever since. But this deal was for K1 was starting at the bottom. And he's, you know, had to work these last 2 years to try and get better and better. And hopefully, you know, like I said earlier, hopefully this is the best we've been. And we'll see how it plays out.
I know you're a big fan of the Mahomes model and how they did that with him.
I'm more of a fan of the Eli Manning model.
Okay.
Which is sit for half the season, get some experience in that first year, but it's not 17 games. It's not 16 games. It's not more games than you've ever played in your life. It's not this overwhelming. But sit, I mean, Kurt Warner played, I think, 8 games, and then Eli took over and played about 8. So you didn't have a full docket of all these games. So you got 2 more months to sit and learn. You got 2 extra months to sit, to learn, to watch, to go through film. Then you take over, and then you play. So I like that model, but I also like the sit for a year model. There's the Aaron Rodgers model. You sit for 6 years behind Brett Favre, and then you get to play. You know, Jordan Love. I mean, Jordan Love is sitting behind Aaron Rodgers now for a second year. Yeah. He's going to sit behind Aaron Rodgers, and then he'll eventually become that guy. I mean, Garoppolo was a second-round pick. He sat behind Brady. And so, I mean, we see it a lot where a team drafts a guy, and this guy's going to be my future quarterback. They draft him. They know he's going to be the future quarterback, and he has to wait. Garoppolo did it. Jordan Love, there's another example. I can't remember who it is, but Jordan Love is an example. But I like the Eli example, and I like the Mahomes example too. I mean, that was a perfect situation. It just sucks for the guy that knows he's getting replaced. It like sucks for Alex Smith that he knows he's going to get replaced by Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you just look at the quarterbacks in this year's draft, and I would imagine you're going to see something very similar to kind of what you prefer. I think the Eli model is probably the one they're going to use in San Francisco with Trey Lance and Jimmy Garoppolo. He'll probably start 6 or 7 games, and then at some point they'll make the switch. It could work out that way. In Chicago, I would imagine it's going to be Andy Dalton for a few weeks, and then eventually they'll transfer over to Fields, even though Fields had an incredible preseason debut over the weekend, right? I mean,
yes.
You look at Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence is going to be Kyler Murray. He's going to be the guy from day one. Zach Wilson, he's going to be Kyler Murray. He's going to be the guy from day one. Everybody does it a little differently just based off
sure,
of their
traded Sam
situation.
Darnold to set up Zach Wilson to play right away. Yeah, I mean, yeah, everybody kind of does it. But the problem is for teams is that usually these teams that are drafting a quarterback, they're not any good. And they need a quarterback. Like, I'm drafting you in the first round with one of my top picks. I'm moving up to Buffalo, moved up 2 spots to get Josh Allen. Like, you know, they moved up twice. You usually draft in a quarterback because your team's no good.
Yeah.
When the Jets drafted Sam Darnold, that they were no good. You know, when Buffalo got Josh Allen, they weren't any good. When
Cardinals got Kyler, they were no good.
They were no good. When they got, you know, so when you're drafting these quarterbacks, you're usually no good. So you know, you're paying these guys a lot of money too, right? So your feeling is, okay, I need to get them out there right away, and I need these guys to play.
It is an interesting comp, though, because Cliff is absolutely right. Mahomes took over a really good situation 1 year when Alex Smith left. I mean, that was a really good situation to kind of walk into, whereas Kyler was walking into a team that was terrible and really had to kind of tear it down to the studs and start over. As far as his relationship with Kyler, Cliff opened up a little bit about that today.
We both came in the league together. You know, we were both rookies as far as me being a coach and him being a player. And so we've learned a lot. We'll see where it goes. We feel like we're in the best place we've been in from a roster perspective. And I think both of us being on the same page, me understanding what he likes and him understanding what I'm trying to get to. And so that's important. And now we just got to go out there and execute.
I hope so. I hope they're on the same page, because we all know what's at stake for Cliff Kingsbury this year. And if nothing else, Cliff Kingsbury, the offensive coordinator, Cliff Kingsbury, the offensive guru, has to have a good year this year, because he didn't have a good year last year.
No.
That offense didn't have a good year last year. And Cliff needs to remind everybody, show everybody, why he was hired by the Cardinals 2 years ago. And that starts, I understand he's the head coach of the whole football team, but the very basic core of what Cliff is here to do is to maximize what that offense does. And in that regard, they failed miserably last year. Cliff's got to have a big year. That he better be on the same page with Kyler Murray this year, because it's all on this year for Cliff.
Which is why I was like, you know, the creativity with Rondale Moore in the first preseason game took me a little bit by surprise. You know, so
showing off some of what was in the playbook a little bit, right?
I think that there is a lot of things that he wants to try, and I don't think he wants to wait for all of them for the regular season. I want to see if he wants to, the creativity was unbelievable with Rondale Moore, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the jet sweep, and they lined him up out wide twice, most of the time in the slot, but just the things that they did was not something that I think you would expect from a vanilla offense.
Tom Pelissero had reported a few minutes ago that the Cardinals worked out wide receiver Josh Doctson today, former TCU receiver, if I'm not mistaken.
Really good.
Which makes me wonder if that has anything to do, and I just saw that a moment ago, so it's not like that's been out there a while. Makes me wonder if that has anything to do with Andy Isabella and the time that he's missing. Because Cliff was asked today if the time out is hurting Andy Isabella.
We're going to see how it all plays out, but it definitely doesn't help the development. Didn't have a preseason last year. We would have liked him to get to play in these games that unfortunately hasn't been able to. But Kyler said to him, he's very smart, knows the system inside out, can play inside, can play outside. And so as far as understanding what we're trying to accomplish, he won't miss much.
Josh Doctson was the 22nd overall pick in the first round of the 2016 draft. He spent last year with the Minnesota Vikings, only played in one game. Obviously, he is known for his time with Washington, but apparently, according to Tom Pelissero, the Cardinals worked him out today. I have to wonder if that might have something to do with Isabella and his availability or his roster spot moving forward. It was just a workout.
I'm going to check
on that. They didn't sign him. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
I'm going to check on that to see if that has anything to do with Andy.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, he was the most watched player on the Suns Summer League roster. Did Jalen Smith show enough to warrant a larger role for the Suns next season? Because they could certainly use him. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo show. So for the Phoenix Suns, the big announcement today, they're going to play on Christmas Day. They got one of those coveted, is it 10 slots, 10 teams play on Christmas Day, and the Suns are one of them. They'll take on the Warriors at home, 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Christmas Day. They were also awarded 2 nationally televised games in the first week of the season. Their home opener against the Nuggets will be on ESPN. Their road opener against the Lakers will also be on ESPN. The rest of the nationally televised games are going to be released, I believe, on Friday. And I imagine we're going to see a lot of love for the Phoenix Suns, and rightfully so. Chris Paul, Devin Booker, NBA Finals. There's a lot of star power on that team, and there's a lot of reasons the people are going to want to watch. But for those of us who are kind of interested in the nuts and bolts of this roster, one of the things we've been watching the last few weeks was Jalen Smith. And the second-year player out of Maryland who didn't play in the Summer League finale, we talked about that a little bit yesterday. We were kind of surprised he wasn't in the lineup. Questions still remain, Gambo, about whether he can be the backup four that they need him to be this season. And I don't know if we found out that answer in the summer league when it comes to Jalen Smith.
They decided not to play him in that final game. And I checked on that because I was curious. They just sat him out. He had played 4 out of 5 games. He had played heavy minutes. He was a little sore, a little bit banged up. So they just decided, like a consolation game, that they had seen enough in those 4 games. And because he was a little sore and a little banged up, it has nothing to do with the trade. It was because people were speculating, oh, they're pulling him out because they're trading him. No, it had nothing to do with that. It's just like, okay, got 4 games in. He hadn't played at that level in that many minutes in a long time. They felt like, okay, what's one more game? Not worth it. Again, a little banged up, a little sore. So they pulled him out for that final game.
There was a story on Sports Illustrated, and look, how you can decide this off of 4 Summer League games, I don't know, but they were taking a real close look at those games, and admittedly, I didn't watch that much Summer League, so take this for what it's worth. But one of the NBA writers over at SI.com, writing about takeaways from the Summer League, quote, Smith just doesn't separate well from defenders on the interior. He is heavily right-hand dominant as a finisher. I'm just not convinced Smith is mobile or skilled enough to truly excel as a stretch big in the NBA. If he can beat out Frank Kaminsky this time around, he'll have a pathway to increased minutes as DeAndre Ayton's backup, but that is not the type of profile the Suns were hoping they were getting, and we know this for a fact. Instead, what they're hoping is that he can be on the floor at the same time as DeAndre Ayton as a 4 and not so much of a 5. Based off of what I saw at the Summer League, he writes, it's a stretch to think there's a real opportunity for a sophomore leap coming, and another year of limited returns would thrust Smith further into limbo.
No, let's talk about that power forward spot a little bit too, right? Because right now they have the one roster spot open. They continue to scour the markets for a defensive player. It's unlikely they get any of the guys that have been mentioned. It's unlikely. I wouldn't rule it out completely, but I'm going to say unlikely. But there's not any legitimate minutes for whatever the guy they decide to bring in if they decide to bring somebody in. One of the reasons why is because you've got Jay Crowder, who's your power forward. And the backup power forward right now is Cam Johnson. Cam Johnson's going to get minutes as a backup power forward. Jalen Smith isn't beating out Cam Johnson. So that's where you look, and there's probably not many guys that they could bring in that would beat out Cam Johnson for some of those minutes. So you are going to see Cam Johnson getting some minutes at backup power forward.
Yeah, but I would think that you and I would agree that while Cam Johnson might be the backup power forward when you kind of break down the roster, physically, I don't know if he's ideally suited to guard some of the bigger, stronger guys that a backup four might have to guard, right? I mean, we can call him the backup four, but there are going to be moments where they're going to need a backup four to guard bigger, more physical guys. The kind of guys that Jay Crowder is better at covering than Mikal Bridges is better at covering, right?
Yes.
You're going to need a player to defend those guys when Jay's not on the floor. And no disrespect to Cam, I don't think Cam Johnson's that guy. I don't think Cam Johnson's ever really going to be that guy.
Matchups.
From a physicality standpoint.
Nope, it'll be matchups. It's a mismatch because it's hard for power forward to guard him, and you take a power forward away from the basket because Cam's going to knock, he'll be out there on the 3-point line. So if you got to guard him, you're going to be out and you're going to free up the lane a little bit for, you know, to help with DeAndre or drives and pick and rolls and stuff like that. So, you know, it could be mismatches that you use him for. But, you know, I don't know that Jalen Smith did enough in those games to say, here I am, I've arrived, I'm your guy, give me 8 to 10 minutes a game, I've earned it. Matter of fact, all of the stories that I read, breakout players in the summer league, best players in the summer league, he wasn't on the list.
No.
He wasn't on any of those lists.
I clicked on one today, and I'll be honest with you, I didn't expect to see him on the list. And he wasn't on the list. So what I thought, boy, I'd be pleasantly surprised if Jalen Smith is on this list of breakout players in the summer league.
And he wasn't.
He wasn't on the list.
So he didn't stand out. I think he did okay. He did all right. But there's still a lot of work. Listen, you're not going to get all your draft picks right. And if they miss on this one, then they miss on it. The good thing is they didn't have to rely on this draft pick to come in and play a lot of minutes. They'll have to continue to work and develop it and see what they can get out of him. Now, did he hurt his trade value with these games? Did he... you know, with the reports that are coming out, did he hurt himself trade value wise? Did the team say, yeah, I don't know that guy's going to, I think I'd just rather have a lottery pick with a lottery ticket with a 25th pick and see what I can get, because I've seen Jalen Smith and he's okay, but he's not going to get rotation minutes on my team.
Yeah. And you know what? And I worry about that more than anything, because at least before the summer league, there was a mystery about Jalen Smith. Hey, maybe he's going to take a leap. Maybe he's going to take a jump. And by playing him in those four games, not that it was a mistake to play him, but by playing him in those four games, you've exposed him now to the rest of the NBA. And the rest of the NBA got a real good long look at Jalen Smith. And I have to believe, to your point, you might be right. The rest of the NBA might be looking at Jalen Smith and go, that's not anything I'm a hot rush to acquire.
Yeah.
That's not anything that you know, because I always thought that maybe Jalen Smith and Dario's contract could be kind of packaged together to maybe bring in another player who would better suit their roster
that
needs.
That made a lot of sense.
It did. I just don't know if Jalen Smith played well enough to allow the Suns to dangle him like that. You know, I don't know if he lived up to the billing or not. I'm still hoping. Look, the offseason, we still have 2 months. There are still guys out there who have been unsigned, who have been unaccounted for. The Suns still do have mechanisms to add players, right? They still
quite
have
a few.
Half the mid-level. They have the biannual.
They have $4.5 million left on the mid-level. They've got the biannual. They've got, you could do two-way contracts. You could do a two-for-one trade right now. You could wait until the deadline. You could wait until the buyout market happens, and then you see a guy you like on a buyout market and say, I could offer you more because I've got this. I've got more money to spend. I don't have to offer you a veteran's minimum. I could offer you $1 million more than a veteran's minimum if I want. I could give you a two-year deal. Everybody else can only give you, we like you. I'll give you a two-year deal because you've got the biannual. So you're in a position of strength right now if you're the Suns and you hold this roster spot open, because it's options. What they want right now, honestly, is options. You could sign two players to two-way contracts. So you could have two guys on two-way contracts and have them go back and forth. Like, so there are many options available to them right now to fill that, to use that roster spot at a different time than just going to get somebody at this point.
Yeah, and just so, and they don't even have to have it done by the beginning of the season. I think as long as they've addressed this by the trade deadline, you know, and I know that's a ways away from now, I think the Suns can survive just fine the first part of the schedule without having a true backup power forward on the roster, because they've got just about everything else. I do think that's something they're going to want to address before the playoffs would start, just so they would have that depth and that guy who can, even if it's for 8 minutes a game, who can defend the other guy's big power forward in a physical way that Cam Johnson just can't. But it's nothing they need to address necessarily right now. You can text us your thoughts on the Suns roster, Jalen Smith, and whether he's got a future on it. The FanDuel text line is available to you at 620-620 right now. The college football world is still feeling the effects of the power move by the SEC expanding, bringing in Texas and Oklahoma. The little guys of the sport, they're banding together to fight back. We'll tell you how next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Live from the Auction Studios, Burns and Gambo here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. A lot of this college football talk, especially with Texas and Oklahoma, to be honest with you, it happened right in the middle of the NBA Finals and the NBA playoffs, so we probably didn't get a chance to talk about it as much as maybe we would have liked, or maybe as much as we would have normally in a typical summer. It's a huge, huge, huge story, obviously. And potentially redefining college athletics as we know it, with the SEC absorbing Texas and Oklahoma the way they are, and basically what, you know, what everybody else is going to do around college football in response to that, which is what makes this story that you found yesterday, and we just didn't have time to talk about it, but we knew it was really good, and we wanted to have a good conversation about it. The story that you sent along yesterday, the Pac-12, the Big Ten, and the ACC have had preliminary discussions about forming an alliance, likely built around scheduling, but possibly other areas as well. Who did I not mention in that group?
The Big 12.
And what's left of the Big 12,
which
after Texas and Oklahoma
nothing.
Left?
I mean, the Big 12, unfortunately, what's going to happen here is the Big 12 is no longer going to be a power conference. They're not going to be able to join this party, and they will go by the wayside. Now, you know, that's going to have major implications. You know, You're talking about these programs, these universities have hundreds of million dollars tied up in facilities. And now that they're not, now they may not be able to pay for it because that money's not going to be coming in every year. Minor sports, they're going to have to drop them. There's going to be a huge impact on the athletics and the universities if the Big 12, the remaining schools in the Big 12 are not able to tie in with any one of these power conferences, and they go by the wayside and they get, you know, they end up, you know, merging with the American Conference or something. That's going to have major ramifications to the sports, to the facilities, to everything, because they're no longer going to be a power broker.
Yeah, there's more details on this story, including one Power 5 AD saying, quote, "There is some alignment in us against them a little bit," the them being the SEC in this case, and everybody else kind of teaming up to oppose them to a certain extent. A high-level source told ESPN the potential alliance is in the early stages and could, quote, "create stability without schools moving conferences."
Yes.
Close quote. So instead of the Big Ten and the Pac-12 merging, or the Big Ten raiding the Pac-12, or the Pac-12 and the ACC raiding each other, instead the three of them could get together. And this story brings up a fascinating idea. The three of them could get together, schedule a whole bunch of non-conference games against each other that they could take to the networks and sell.
Ohio State versus USC.
Right. Who wouldn't pay big money for such a thing?
Ohio State versus USC.
Sure. Michigan versus Clemson. Who wouldn't pay big money for something like that? Florida State versus Oregon. I mean, you just start thinking about all the possibilities that you would have of a way to make money. And then the most interesting line in the whole story.
The collusion.
While the Big Ten, ACC, and Pac-12 would improve their non-conference schedules with an alliance, they could take it a step further by refusing to play the top eight teams in the SEC.
Collusion.
Yeah.
So in order for us to make this work, you, Florida State, cannot play Florida. Because we're helping the SEC, giving them a marquee game. We can't do that.
We have to take that from them.
We have to take that from them, yes.
The SEC wants to do this to our sport. We have to punch the SEC where they live.
So no Florida State.
Yep.
We're not going to play Alabama, LSU, Florida. We're not going to play the top schools in the SEC in any non-conference games. We're not going to give it to them.
Yeah.
So we're going to play each other because that's how we're going to sell it to the network. We're going to make major bucks on this because we're going to sell. We'll give you Ohio State versus USC. Really? Okay. That's pretty good. And instead of being able to come back and say, "We're the SEC, but we got Florida State, Florida." No, you don't have Florida State, Florida anymore. Well, why? Because Florida State's not going to play you. Why? Because we can't help you.
Yeah.
We can't.
You're trying to hurt us. We're going to do this to you.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
He brings a knife, you pull a gun.
Oh, yeah. You got untouchables on me.
You send one of his to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way. This is the Chicago way of dealing with the SEC.
I love it. I mean... It's ultimately not good for college football, in my opinion, that this is happening.
Of course
Texas
not.
And Oklahoma leaving.
This is what the SEC has forced these other conferences to do.
Yes.
Is to look at the world the way the SEC is looking at it, is to think the Chicago way when it comes to how we're going to deal with it. Fine, you're going to put one of ours in the hospital, we're going to put one of yours in the morgue. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah, you can't let them hurt you and then still keep helping them.
Right.
Oh, you just damaged my, but I'm going to help you. You know?
Yeah. Which is why Pat Forty said yesterday, College Football
Insider
from Yahoo.
It's like me taking your lunch money. It's like me taking your lunch from you every day, and then you keep bringing in, like, these great cookies every day.
I would not do that.
Yeah, you would be like, you keep them at home.
I would bring you lunch that I know you want to eat. Hey, Mom, don't pack me the good lunch today.
Right.
That bully, John Gambadoro, keeps taking it from me every single day at school.
You're not going to keep bringing in the best stuff.
Yeah. Unfortunately, as Pat Forty points out, nobody is actually thinking about the overall good of the sport in the midst of all
Everybody's trying to one-up each other, and then if you're on the wrong side of being one-up, you're trying to figure out somebody else to come in with you so you can go back at the other side. Again, nobody's looking out for the common good of the sport here. An alliance helps some people, doesn't help everybody. So we'll have to see what an alliance actually means, what it looks like. But again, I just think we continue to head down a road towards a college athletic sphere that's less good for most people.
Pete Thamel from Yahoo on what is the upside for the big brands of the alliance.
Is it really smart for the Big Ten to be aligning themselves with weaker entities? Probably not, right? Is it really smart for... Because remember, it's not the leagues anymore. It's the big brands that are really in charge right now. Like, what does it give to Ohio State, Michigan, and Wisconsin? What does it give to USC? Like, what does it really deliver to the brands who are going to be leaned on for the premium product?
Yeah, and that's as a Pac-12 fan, that's what makes me a little nervous about this. Because there aren't that many big brands in the Pac-12. And there aren't that many big brands, if you think about it, in the ACC once it gets past Clemson and Florida
State. But they have a time zone that nobody else has.
Yeah.
In the Pac-12.
Yeah.
There's a time zone that nobody else has.
And a window to broadcast games that others just can't do it in.
And you've got big markets. You do have big markets. And, you know, the interesting thing is, okay, why would the Big Ten do it? And what they're saying here is, because the Big Ten still leads the way with paying its members $54 million annually, why would they want to share their brand and their finances with the ACC and the Pac-12? And they say playoff access and obviously the brands, the bonds, right? The Pac-12 and the Big Ten have a bond for the Rose Bowl since about 1902. The Big Ten and the ACC in basketball has existed for almost a quarter of a century. And then they bring on that the Pac-12 commissioner attended Virginia. And the Big Ten commissioner, he's from Phoenix, and his brother played at Stanford. And the ACC commissioner worked in the SEC, the Big Ten, and Pac-12. So there is this common bond where they may want to help each other.
Yeah, it's crazy to think what this could look like 5 years from now, what this entire sport could look like 5 years from now, when we might not have any vision of it at all. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo Show, we are in the midst of our fundraiser for Phoenix Children's Hospital. And we will continue to tell stories about why you should donate to this great treasure in our valley. Next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station in the Arizona Sports app. Giveathon on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Every year it is such an honor for us and a pleasure for us. Giveathon week for Phoenix Children's Hospital. Man, we just love telling stories, and we love thinking back to our time there when we're doing shows, raising money. Obviously, we're not able to be there right now given what's going on, but it's such a treasure in our valley, and hopefully you've never had to use PCH. You've never had to visit PCH because of your kids, but if you have had to go to Phoenix Children's Hospital, you know exactly why it's so important. You know why it matters as much as it does. And even though my kids never had to spend a day at Phoenix Children's Hospital, I know the value of it through friends, family members, people that I've been associated with. It's one of the best children's hospitals in the world, Gambo. And when you have something like that in your backyard, you have to work very, very hard to protect it and let it flourish. And that takes money and fundraisers like this.
Yeah, we said about $2.7 million a day to operate this hospital. And they depend a lot on the support of the community because they don't turn any children away. And they've got the Center for Cancer and Blood Disorders. They've got their emergency department. They've got a level one trauma center. They've got a heart center. They have a neonatal division. They've got the neurological institute. I mean, they do so many things, right? They're well equipped to handle almost any issue that comes up with a child in need. Matter of fact, a lot of families from even outside of Arizona will come here just to bring their children to Phoenix Children's Hospital because of the level of care that you get at Phoenix Children's.
So during Giveathon Week presented by your Valley Hyundai dealers, the simplest way for you to get involved is to call the Desert Financial Phone Bank at 602-933-4567. 602-933-4567 and become a champion of hope. $20 or more per month, and we'll make sure a child at Phoenix Children's Hospital gets a teddy bear on your behalf. It's the simplest, easiest, best way for you to get involved with Phoenix Children's Hospital. But there are a lot of people getting involved with Phoenix Children's Hospital, and that includes this check presentation from Superstar Car Wash.
Hi, my name is Jonathan Kierman. I'm with Superstar Car Wash, and we're happy to be a part of this year's Giveathon. This is the first year that we're partnering with Phoenix Children's, and we're a proud sponsor of Child Passenger Safety Awareness. During the month of July and into August and September, our customers have an opportunity not only to give at our car washes, but to actually purchase a special wash, which part of the proceeds will go to Phoenix Children's Hospital. So I want to say thank you to our amazing customers for doing that in advance. And with your help, we're able to present this check for $25,000.
Wow, that's a big check.
We encourage the community to call the phone bank at 602-933-4567 and support this year's Giveathon. On behalf of Superstar Car Wash, thank you, Phoenix Children's, for being there for our community to provide hope, strength, and to change kids' health to change the future.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Superstar Car Wash. How about that? What a great donation.
Their first year. Their first year in. $25,000
for donating. Man, it makes me want to go to Superstar Car Wash right now. And it's just fantastic. What a great donation. We really appreciate them, you know, being involved with this year's Giveathon, for Phoenix Children's Hospital. We appreciate their support.
Yes, we do. And it's stories like this that we really appreciate the work of Jonathan, Superstar Car Wash, and everybody out there listening right now. Stories like Brooke's story, which we're about to tell. She had a grim diagnosis at only 5 weeks old. It forecasted a very limited life for Brooke as a quote-unquote forever baby, always developmentally an infant. Now she's 11 years old. She still requires total care, can't walk or talk. Learn more about Brookie the Brave and how, thanks to her care team at Phoenix Children's, she has continued fighting the odds and progressing in her own little way. This is Brooke's story.
Hi, my name is Brittany Miller from Queen Creek, Arizona, and this is my daughter Brooke Miller's journey with Phoenix Children's Hospital. When she was born, we had no idea that there was anything medically wrong with her. Typical little baby girl. And almost 12 years ago now, she was starting to have these weird movements. I called the after-hours line at our pediatrician, and they immediately told me to rush her to Phoenix Children's. Soon, we started to build a medical team, and Child Life embraced our family. The nurses were so compassionate. Of course, the physicians were incredibly medically talented, but they also treated the family. It wasn't just treating our little daughter, Brooke. The Happy Hand Hospital, and that's what my four-year-old and two-year-old called it, and they just knew it was a happy place. Even though it was a place where their sister was struggling, Phoenix Children's became our second home.
When I think about the things that we've been through, I know just one thing is true. Life is better with you. Some days are better than other days, but these days, life is better with you. Life is better.
She received her diagnosis very quickly, and with that came early intervention and seizure medications. Skilled neurologists who knew what medicines to try and fought for us and advocated with her insurance to pay for some of these more expensive ones that really work for her. Bacardi syndrome basically is a genetic disorder. They don't know the cause of it, but her brain didn't form correctly. A lot of children with her diagnosis don't make it past the first year. But in true Brookie fashion, she kept, persevering, and she made it for that first year. She's alive because of the care she's received at the hospital, and our family is happy. And I know a lot of that has to do with the support and guidance we've received. It sounds kind of terrible, but you always think, like, it happens on TV or it happens to other people. It would never happen to us. When we found out Brooke's diagnosis and realized the care that she was going to need, I was so thankful to have such an outstanding children's hospital in our state. You never know in your life whether you're going to be that family that needs assistance. And if you are, PCH is here. Are there more good days than bad days? Yes, there are more good days. Brooke is 99.9% of the time a happy, spunky, silly little girl. She's present and happy, and there's light in her eyes. If I was given a diagnosis like this and had to face a life of living on the sidelines and knowing my life was going to be limited and having, severe epilepsy and countless hospitalizations, I don't know if I could have such a happy disposition, but she does. She is brave, and she has taught us more in her 11 years than I've learned in my 41, and I am eternally grateful for the experience of raising her and being her mother. Being a medical mom or a special needs mom, it's the most wonderful club I never, ever, ever wanted to be a part of, but now I can't live without it.
Life is better.
Brookie the Brave.
Wow. These stories, they just...
I know.
They just...
Like a ton of bricks.
Oh, man, this year's stories say... If their job was to get me to cry every single day, I mean, if that was their job when they put this together, I want to applaud them. They're doing an amazing job of making me cry. Yeah, I mean, just... She's happy. I mean, she's a forever baby, right? She's a forever baby. She's not going to go to high school. She's not going to go to college. She's not going to walk down the aisle. She's not, but she's loved. She's loved. And she, not only is she loved, she gives the parents love. I mean, you could just tell with the mom's voice how much love that child is giving the family.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done everything they can. And here she is 11 years old and she'll be a baby, you know, a forever baby. Unable to do things that any normal child could do, but the love there is just so obvious. And Phoenix Children's Hospital just doing a great job of, you know, keeping her happy and alive.
These stories continue to move us, you're moved by these stories, now it is time for you to pick up the phone and call the Desert Financial Phone Bank at 602-933-4567, because we are in a match. The Spirit Halloween Superstores. They are matching your donations right now when you call the Desert Financial Phone Bank, 602-933-4567. Tell the operator who picks up the phone you want to become a champion of hope. That's 602-933-4567. When you become a champion of hope, $20 or more per month is what you're donating. You can make it more if you'd like, but $20 or more per month makes you a champion of hope. And listen to all these wonderful people who have become champions of hope just in the last few minutes. Doug in Scottsdale, Albert in Glendale, Stephen in Anthem, Andrew in Phoenix, Linda in Peoria, $100 a month from Linda as a champion
Linda.
Of hope. Mike in Scottsdale, William in Gilbert, all have become champions of hope. And if you would like your donation to be matched right now by the Spirit Halloween Superstores, up to $5,000, Desert Financial Phone Bank, it's open for you right now, 602-933-4567.
Yeah, let me give you that number again. Become a champion of hope, $20 a month. Call 602-933-4567. Do it for Brookie the Brave.
And when you become a champion of hope, we fire up the train Teddy Bear Express, and it goes upstairs to Phoenix Children's Hospital. Gambo and I virtually were able to deliver some teddy bears in the last few weeks. It's a wonderful experience. And every time you become a champion of hope, we deliver a teddy bear on your behalf at Phoenix Children's Hospital. So thanks to all of those who became a champion of hope. And thanks to you for becoming one when you call 602-933-4567. Turn our attention back to sports, and when we come back, the NBA schedule makers paid attention to the Suns during the NBA Finals, clearly. And for us here in the Valley, it's going to make Christmas Day a very busy sports day. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.